Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Guys probably listening to Guns N' Roses and watching some baseball this morning from the MLB Network and the Athletic. Jason Stark, what's going on?
Kevin, how are you, man?
I'm doing fine, doing fine.
That's my first Guns N' Roses of the morning, though, just in case you're wondering.
Oh, really? Okay. We wasn't into Appetite for Destruction before we came on here. the Brewers-Reds game is one of those things to me that's an example of what's fun about baseball, how a random game can give you something fun to watch. It was just the game was crazy. But Christian Yelich went 6-for-6, hit for the cycle. That guy is so talented. Is this where he finally sticks and becomes a star after those years he played in Miami?
You mean the last night make him a star? He was already on the road to start him, but if this doesn't put him on the map, I'm not sure what will.
No, I mean, just overall, and the season that he's having, not necessarily last night.
Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about last night for a second, though. One of the greatest games in the history of the baseball, don't you think? 6-for-6 with a cycle, throws out a runner at the plate from the outfield. I don't believe that's ever been done. He's the first player in the history of the National League to go 6-for-6 and hit a cycle. So I'm thinking that's never been done. And then if you just want to talk about his season, he was always a batting title waiting to happen. What's erupted now this season is the power. And what's really interesting about that, a guy who's got 26 home runs, his fly ball rate has gone down this year. What has gone up, what has more than doubled, is the percentage of fly balls that he hits that leave the park. He's at 33% of his fly balls land in somebody's popcorn box.
Man.
That's amazing. That's the number one rate in the big leagues. I think the ballpark is part of it, but the other part of it is this is an incredibly talented player.
One more thing on that game. I don't think I've ever seen a situation where a guy was trying to bunt and fouled one off, but got a second life at the plate because they said he was protecting himself, talking about Michael Lorenzen.
Yeah.
And then, like, on the next pitch, he hits one of the stands in left field. It was crazy.
Yeah, I've read the quotes from the umpires on that call, and I still don't quite understand it. I mean, their explanation was he was attempting to get out of the way. He wasn't intentionally attempting to bunt the ball, even though he'd squared. And so because of that, it becomes just an ordinary foul ball, not a foul ball attempting to bunt. And so the difference is you're alive or you struck out, right? So he's alive, then he hits a home run. And it's his third homer against that team this year.
Yeah, it's his fourth of the season. Yeah, he's a terrific hitter.
Yeah, he's got four homers, and he is not even a starting pitcher. It's one of the most incredible offensive seasons ever by a pitcher.
Sometimes it's easy to get too optimistic about an interim manager having a good stretch, but did you like the Cardinals did the right thing by making Mike Shildt the permanent guy with just the way that teams responded to him?
I think that's safe to say. I thought it was interesting that they did it when they did it, but he's managed 40 games now. They've won 27 of them. Now, if you were to do that over a full season, that computes to a 109 win pace. And that's pretty incredible. But I think there's no doubt he has had a huge impact on that team on many levels. One of the first is I think he reestablished order. It felt like everybody on their team was playing out of position for a while there. And he put a stop to that. Right, Matt Carpenter was going to play first. Jose Martinez was going to play in the outfield if he started at all. He was going to make sure that they caught the ball. They were leading the league in errors. The other thing is, I think things had gotten tense there under Mike Matheny. That's all gone now. He's re-energized their culture. He's empowered their stars. He played Yadi Molina 27 games in a row. first catcher in history to start 27 games in a row at that age. But that was his way of saying, this is how important this guy is. This is how important the centerpiece players on our roster are. And we're going to build this team around them again. And it's worked.
Well, with Jason Stark from The Athletic and Major Baseball Network, and I guess tell us a little tidbit, man. I'd love to hear your stories, Jason, on the Jimmy Rollins baseball stories. Just give us a little bit of what we can look forward to when we go listen to that.
Yeah, I spent hours talking to Jimmy because I still live in Philadelphia. He came up when I was actually still working at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and we've known each other a long time. And you know, what's really interesting about Jimmy Rollins is he's a little guy, right? 5'7", but he's got a big presence, and he always loved a big moment. I had him talk about that. And he always, you know, from the beginning, he was never afraid to say what he thought and say what was on his mind. Like, he arrived on a team that had never won, right? They had been in this prolonged stretch where they'd been to the postseason one time in two decades. And all he ever wanted to talk about was winning. And his most famous moment, I think, as Philly, came not on the field, but when he said before the 2007 season, he thought the Phillies were the team to beat. Now, the Braves had just finished their big run. The Mets had finally broken that, and they seemed like they were going to be the team. And that sent massive shockwaves up and down the NL East. And his explanation of why he said what he said and what he thought and hoped would happen, I thought it was incredible. This is available on watchstadium.com. I hope people will check it out.
All right, we'll do, we'll do. I guess quickly for me, any predictions on Rookie of the Year in the AL and NL? Yeah.
You know, in the AL, the big debate is what do we do about Shohei Ohtani, right? And I think we've kind of overlooked him since he stopped pitching, but let's think about it. This guy with a 900 OPS, 15 homers, and he had a 3.10 ERA as a pitcher with 61 strikeouts in 49 and a third. And, you know, I think the knock against him is, well, there's not enough volume there. Well, really? You know, he faced 200 hitters as a pitcher. He's got 262 plate appearances as a hitter. I think he's been the best player. He's made the biggest impact. But you've got Gleyber Torres and Miguel Andujar in New York. That's going to be a fun race. And then the National League, what an incredible duel between Ronald Acuna, 20 years old, and Juan Soto, 19 years old. I think Acuna has passed Soto by the second half he's had, the impact he makes on both sides of the ball. But what a fun race.
Jason, can the Braves have big success without a true closer as we, you know, head into the stretch in October?
You know, it's a great question, Mark. The game is evolving away from that, obviously, but I had a GM tell me a few years back, when your closer stinks, your team stinks. And I can't get that quote out of my head because, all right, maybe you can make it work by matching up, but I think in general, because human beings are involved, you need to establish order. And if you don't have order and things start to come apart, then you have a clubhouse that's questioning what's going on. That could happen in Atlanta. It could happen in Philadelphia. It's really interesting that you've got multiple teams that are in contention trying to go down this road. The Cubs are another.
The Dodgers go out and get Machado and Dozier. That's a pretty good middle infield. But, Jason, what happens if they miss? They could win the World Series. They could also miss the playoffs.
Well, they could. I mean, the Kenley Jansen thing was incredible, giving up those home runs, three straight games, to either tie the game or blow a lead, right, put the other team ahead. And that Kenley Jansen injury, between all the issues they had trying to fill in for him and all the issues he's had since he came back, is one more thing that proves the when your closer stinks, your team stinks portion of this. But I think they have stabilized. They're only a game out now again in the West, and they're only, a game and a half out in the wild card. And they're the best team. They're the deepest team in that division. I think they're going to get in. If they don't, it's just going to be because it was one of those years. And I think both teams that went to the World Series have found out that it really does have a ripple effect the next season.
All right, I've been dying to ask you this question for weeks. These guys are going to get all over me about this because I asked Aaron Boone this question. If he doesn't blow his knee out in the winter of 2003, does A-Rod go to the Red Sox? Does Curt Schilling go to the Yankees? And how does that change history?
A-Rod was going to go to the Red Sox. I think there's no doubt about that. He was not going to be a Yankee. You never know what would have happened if those two teams just decided they wanted to mess with each other, which was that was war back then. The Schilling portion of it, I'm not sure, because he controlled his own destiny. Maybe he wouldn't have gone to New York. But if A-Rod had been a Red Sox, the planet would have turned upside down, right? Would he have sued the Red Sox like he sued the Yankees?
I don't know. That's what makes it so fascinating.
No kidding.
Jason, great stuff. Thank you so much.
Always enjoyed, guys. Thanks.